Meeting is now being recorded.
Thank you. Hello, Jean-Baptiste speaking. Welcome to RDS with two plenary calls for face-to-face meeting number 4. This is day 1, taking place on 10th of December 2018 at 8 UTC. Attending the call today, we have Alan Greenberg, Susan Kawaguchi, Catherine Borbolt, Volker Grayman, Dimitri Belyavsky, Lillison, Chris Despain. From Iconog, we have Jean-Baptiste Daoulé, Nigar Farzinia, Brenda Brewer, Jackie Traber, and we have no observers in the room. In terms of apologies, we received one from Erica Mann, who will arrive later this afternoon, and Carlton is delayed. Thank you.
And this is Alan Greenberg, the chair of the RDS Who Is Two review team. I'll also note that we have one other person who we believe is not coming, but we have actually heard from him, Thomas Walton. I'm sorry, we have confirmation he said he wasn't coming. Thomas, do we have any statements of interest that have changed? None indicated. Next item is housekeeping, and I will turn it over to Jean-Baptiste.
Thank you, Alan. So just as a reminder, raise your hand if you wish to be added to the queue. Session is recorded. Always use your microphone. State your name before speaking. If at all possible, limit the use of your laptop during the meeting. For the breaks, food and water is located in the reception desk. The kitchen area will be used for lunches, like for past meetings. And if you to the bathroom, there are badges which are just available close to the door. Thank you.
Thank you. To be clear, we will be using the Adobe Connect room. If for some reason you can't get into it, we'll try to intermix hands. And I'm not in the Adobe Connect room yet, so please take that into account. All right, opening remarks. Why do we have an echo? The intent of this meeting is to, it's a three-day meeting. We've allocated a fair amount of time for each of the topics. The intent is to come out of this meeting with the recommendations locked in. Now, unfortunately, I was just told that the comments from ICANN.org, which are presumably largely implementation-related, but nevertheless could affect the wording of the recommendations, will not be delivered for some small number of days. And we have an ICANN staff member who would like to speak. Nagar.
Thank you, Alan. Nagar Farzinia for the record. So the comments that the ICANN.org is looking to provide to the review team is a combination of some clarifying questions that we would like the review team to help address. What we have done is look at the feasibility of implementation of the recommendations. As we had discussed during the past face-to-face meeting, our goal is to improve the way we do implementation of the recommendations, and so we start looking at the feasibility of implementation while the review team is developing their draft recommendations and working on finalizing it. So part of the feedback are clarifying questions we hope to ask the review team to better understand parts of the recommendations that we may not be quite clear on. And the rest of them are really implementation operational feedback for the review team to hopefully help streamline the recommendations to ensure that implementation is more effective and feasible. And as you noted, Alan, we are looking to have that feedback to the review team in the next few days and hopefully get your response on our clarifying questions.
If I may ask, does the next few days imply before we leave Brussels?
Our target target was to provide the feedback to you while you were in Brussels, but I think the likelihood is a little less. We are still, I know that back in LA, folks are working hard to get everything to you guys soon. So fingers crossed, I'll keep you posted on the progress. And if everything goes according to my plan, at least we should have something before we leave Brussels.
I hope they'll be working as hard to arrange our fifth face-to-face meeting if we need it. Please note, if you're speaking without the microphone, you don't go on the record, but also I can't hear you.
Yeah, that would be visual.
That may meet everyone's targets. All right. Two things. The next one is opening remarks and day one objectives. So on opening remarks, I guess I have free rein. We will, as we go through the day, be talking a little bit about the EPDP because the way things are going in the EPDP, I think implicitly will impact what we do, either in a positive or negative way, but I don't think we can ignore the trends that are emerging out of that process. We managed to get full consensus on all the draft recommendations. It would certainly be nice to have full consensus on all of the recommendations coming out of the final report, but I have no illusions that as we come down to final wording, we may not get full consensus, and I certainly can live with that, and we will have ample for people to submit statements. Since we are not trying to come out of this meeting with a draft report ready to ship, we are expecting that not to happen until sometime later in January. There will be plenty of opportunity for individual statements of dissent or disagreement or whatever. And as much as I'd like not to have many of those, I think we have to accept the fact that we may not get full closure. And hopefully we do have a rule of and we will be using it, but we will move forward regardless. The objectives from this meeting overall, as I said, are to come to closure to the extent that we can within this group on what it is we're recommending. We may well have some recommendations where for one reason or another we can't determine the absolute wording. And certainly we've heard because of comments from ICANN staff that we may end up having to do some more work after this, but that's certainly the intent. We have tried to arrange the order of the subjects so that the more contentious ones are earlier in the meeting so that we have an opportunity to do redrafting or private work in between. The fact that two of our members are not here yet, three including Stephanie, is somewhat problematic, and that may impact how we go forward. But the intent certainly is still to do that. And I think that basically is where we are, and we've tried to allow adequate time for what we believed would be the more difficult discussions and less for others. We are clearly going to have to be adjusting the time schedule going forward, and we're going to be flexible on that. When we allocated 3 days, we thought it was more than liberal. I'm not sure anymore, but we'll see. And before we go into the work plan, which I'll turn it over to Jean-Baptiste for, are there any questions or comments on targets of what we want to get out of this or questioning the methodology that we're proposing? All right. So once we start, we will be based discussions largely on the comments we received. However, the who is world, I may use the archaic term, is a changing one. And to the extent that we believe that there are either things in the original recommendation which we would do differently now, or that there are new issues that we did not consider at all before that have to be raised, although the norm is that we try to publish our draft recommendations, our recommendations in the draft report. There is no rule saying we cannot add a recommendation in the document as appropriate. So, and that's all I have in terms of opening comments. And I know Jean-Baptiste is going to look at the work plan. The work plan has been adjusted as best we understand now to go along with the January ending date. But certainly those of us who have any other parts of our life would really not like to miss the January. But we'll have to play that by ear. I do have some comments on the form of the draft report, but Jackie will be taking us through that in the next item. I'll defer it to this. So any further comments before I turn it over to Jean-Baptiste for the work plan? No? Jean-Baptiste, it's yours.
Thank you very much, Alan. So the work plan that you currently see on screen is reflect the latest changes and decisions that were made, including the extension of the public comment period. So by now, by 21st of December 2018, the review team has a target to update the recommendations and report based on the public comment received. That leads us to the deadline of the 11th of January 2019 to approve the final findings and recommendations for submission to the ICANN board. And finally, by January, the final report will be sent to the ICANN board and language services. So this is a buffer that leaves time to adjust the draft report, all the formatting, and all that is linked to also translations and preparing all that. And on that same milestone and deadline, by that date, the review team will have to identify review team members who will remain available for clarification as may be needed during the implementation planning phase. And if you recall, this is one of your terms of reference. You had already stipulated that in the terms of reference. I've included into the appendices, and I'm more than happy to get back to that at the end of the meeting, more information on what is really needed just the level of involvement needed for those two or more review team members staying after the review team has stopped.
Thank you, Jean-Baptiste. And to that end, we have informally offered to ICANN.org and or the ICANN board or a subset of the board to meet in Kobe in a meeting in March and clarify, discuss, whatever. Obviously, we can't change the recommendations at that point, but hopefully if in the interim month and a half or so any questions have arisen or any clarification is needed or it will be helpful, will be available then. Susan will be there, and I think Catherine will be there. So hopefully amongst the three of us, we'll have some idea of what's going on. Chris, yes?
Thanks, Alan. If you're right, and there are some, unless I misheard you, you said I think there will be some recommendations on which there won't be consensus. If you're right, are you anticipating that this report will say here is a recommendation that we couldn't reach consensus on, or that they will just be taken out? I'm asking because when it comes to discussion, envisage managing that?
I may have used the wrong word. We will have consensus on everything. We may not have unanimity.
Okay.
We do have words in our terms of reference about consensus. So we may well have, and I would not expect to have more than one person on any given topic, but we may not have unanimity. We will have consensus. Jean-Baptiste, were you finished?
Yes, unless
okay.
There are any comments.
No. Then we're on to item 2 of the overview of the draft report. And it says ICANN.org. I'm not sure if Jackie is presenting or somebody else.
Jackie Treiber for the record. So I am working with ICANN.org to assess any issues with the draft report. And I just wanted to first describe my methodology, which was pretty consistent for most editors. I looked at to make sure that the writing was clear, logical threads kind of continue throughout. I mentioned backing up all claims. That mostly just means if you are, if the team is waiting for a report, for instance, from the Registrar Working Group, there's a section of the report that is waiting for that we do eventually get that. Looking to remove any redundancies throughout, both globally and line by line. Sometimes that happens in certain sections. It happens actually quite a bit in the executive summary, so we'll review that later this week. And of course, I'm proofreading for any spelling errors, grammar, numbering issues, which there are a few numbering issues throughout the relevant research links. We can review that later as well. Also looking for formatting issues, any graphical issues. For instance, in the law enforcement section, there are a few graphs, at least for me, that were missing or repeated, or they didn't actually match the narrative that precedes it. And then, of course, I'm looking for a consistent voice, making sure tenses match, and that the style and voice is consistent as well. Next slide, please. Another way that I determine sort of the readability of the document is to reference a pretty universal readability scale, which is called the Fleischmann scale. I may have mentioned this in our last leadership call on the 5th of December, but I'll review it here once more. The reading ease scale is on a 100-point scale. Between 60 and 70 on that scale is plain English. Of course, we're dealing with a fairly technically oriented, you know, somewhat dense topic, so I don't expect us to get to 60, but currently we're sitting at about 30 on that scale, which is quite low. So I'm editing to make sure that we have a more readable document if possible. And then, of course, I'm looking at the grade level comprehension of the document, which most publications strive for a grade level of 8. Again, I understand we're talking about more technically dense information, so I don't think we're going to get there, but currently we're at a graduate level or PhD level. So if we can maybe make that a little lower, that would be great. And let's see, for instance, with the review background of the executive summary, that was quite low ability scale, so I'll be editing for that to make sure that we can get something that's a little more straightforward and concise. Next slide, please. Again, I mentioned this in the leadership call, but our executive summary is roughly sitting at 6 to 7% of the document, which is on target. We discussed during the meeting that I initially wanted to edit it for length, but the leaders decided that we should edit for clarity and not necessarily for length. So I'll be striving to do that. Next up, I'll discuss the non-commercial stakeholder group comments and how we plan to address those. they asked for a need for a clear expansion of the acronyms at first introduction and throughout major sections of the document. Alan has said before that he believes that you all have done that, and I would agree. There are a couple spots where that doesn't occur, but I think that they're few and far between. Secondly, they asked for an acronym list to be created and listed under Appendix A. I have my edits so far have incorporated undefined acronyms into the glossary. I don't know if that is something that we want to proceed with or not, but there were some acronyms that were not defined in the document, including GDPR and ARS. So I'll be working on that the next few days. Next slide. They also noted that there were some formatting issues. The leaders somewhat agreed, but I will be, you know, examining the document globally to make sure that it's readable on that front as well. I don't think it's excessively bad. I think it just needs some tightening. They also commented on some grammatical typographic errors. There are many of those, so I'm taking care of that. The leadership team agreed as well. They then went on to say that the naming and cross-referencing of recommendations from one review team to the other are somewhat confusing. We suggest including a cross-reference index in the appendices in the executive summary, or to simply stick to the recommendations of the first review, not the subteams. Team leaders believe they cross-reference the recommendations already. I will do due diligence to ensure complete comprehension. I reviewed the executive summary this morning, and the recommendations are, of course, listed in that grid. And I actually think that we could probably elucidate that a little further in the executive summary. I think that would help people a lot. I struggled with that myself as the editor, so I think that readers are going to experience that confusion as well. Thank you. A few more observations. I noticed there's some missing information. I reached out to a couple of the teams already about this, but in consumer trust, for instance, there's a list of reviewed web pages. That's missing. Anything in the anything new section? Page 88, there's the impact of GDPR. That's missing. Section 8.3.4, cross-field validation, they're waiting a response from the Registrar Working Group, which was due the 31st of July. I realized that was around the time that this review draft was completed, so I understand why that's missing, but that's another bit of information that we need to access. And I also noted that the relevant research links took up quite a bit of the main part of the document, and I thought that we could just port that into the appendices. And during the leadership call, the leaders agreed that that would be a good idea. It's okay. I lost your mouse. There it is. Some unfinished business. I already mentioned the missing sections. Some relevant research link sections need serious overhaul with multiple instances of missing links, strange numbering, and that's also an issue of formatting as well. And then section reviews should be done by team leaders soon. We had experienced a bit of a hiccup as far as porting this document into Google Docs, where everyone should be able to access it soon. I ideally wanted to get review team leaders to comment on some of my questions prior to this meeting, but hopefully we'll be doing that in the next few days. And then, as I mentioned earlier, there are some graphical components to the report that don't necessarily match the narrative that precedes it. So if we could take a look at that, that would help as well. And that concludes my assessment, however cursory, of the document so far.
Thank you, Jackie. A couple of comments. The report, we were originally hoping to have the report out end of July.
essentially when we left Brussels. That clearly did not happen for a number of good reasons. And for a number of reasons, some personnel related, we had to have it out by the end of August, period. There was no opportunity for extension there. And some of the roughness that you have seen was purely because of that. The law enforcement, for instance, was added very, very near the end of the process. That survey was done much later. So I'm not surprised to find that it didn't quite hold together. But a lot of the other formatting and errors were purely due to timing that we have literally no control over. In terms of redundancy, and I've said all this to you already, but I want to make it quite public. We were given a format for the report, which some of us objected to at the time, which essentially said when we make a recommendation, we have to, in that section, justify why it is, even if it had been said the page before. And that resulted in a lot of redundancy. It may make the recommendation section self-consistent, but from a reader who's actually going to the trouble of reading the report, it is exceedingly redundant. And from this point, from my point of view, as a chair with no authority whatsoever, I would say, rules be damned, let's make this report readable and comprehensible. For anyone who chooses to actually read the whole report, we don't want to turn them off halfway through. That being said, we know a significant number of people will only read the executive summary, which is why we have said that there will be redundancy there, and that's simply pragmatic. And glossary, I don't care if we call it a glossary or an appendix. I don't much care if it's at the beginning or at the end. There are different style guides. It should be complete and have all of the things in it. And again, for timing reasons, we may have missed that. And lastly, recommendation numbering. I read that originally in the NCSG report, and I said, what are they talking about? Because our recommendation numbering is very consistent. If it's a follow-on to one of the first review teams, one, it is R, the number of the original recommendation, and then a subnote. And if it's one of ours, then it's CM or law enforcement or whatever. There's only one catch. We didn't bother explaining that to anyone. So it looks like a hodgepodge, even though we did it exceedingly carefully. So that one I found interesting. Any other comments, either in response to me or in response to Jackie? I'm looking forward to a nice, elegant, short document. Okay. Next item is discussion of anything new in the RDS environment that require additional thoughts. Now, this is here, and it allows 15 minutes. But it's a recurrent thought that's going to come up as we go through everything. I think the one thing that has significantly changed is PDP, since we last met and froze the report, the EPDP is running. We're starting to gauge what some of the likely outcomes are going to be, and in my mind, that may well influence where we go. Not that we can alter the EPDP output, but we can certainly make comments if we feel they're appropriate. And other than that, that's the elephant in the room, of course, that is affecting everything we do. But there may well be other things going on that are relevant as we go through the report. Does anyone else have anything else they'd like to raise now? Susan.
So I am curious. I mean, we're 6 months out of, you know, from May 25th, and, you know, I am starting to see a lot of strange things in the WHO's records or no WHO's records at all. And so there's definitely quite a bit of proactive, let me say this nicely, the registrars that are not complying with the temp spec at all. Then you have, on the other side of it, you have a lot of registrars that I just don't think are engaged at all and have no idea that the GDPR is an issue. And, the, I mean, it's not their country, so therefore maybe they shouldn't be redacting the data. But so there's a very inconsistent, the WHOIS looks extremely inconsistent now, in my opinion. And so, A, you know, do we go through and sort of catalog that and say, you know, here's a list of things we think are problematic, and hopefully these get resolved through either ICANN compliance or adherence to the, you know, to the temp spec or temp spec right now. I mean, is the temp spec really in place? Because it doesn't look like it is. And so, you know, I mean, we could write a full, another full report on what we're seeing now, but is that our responsibility as a review team?
Well, question, Susan, is consistency what you're looking for? Because consistency will be exceedingly easy. Everything will be redacted.
Well, that's what's going on.
And that varies.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
I mean, for instance, I have GoDaddy domains, and my information is still there in public on the GoDaddy's site. The registry has chosen to redact it, even though it's a thick WHOIS. You know, you say there are registrars who don't seem to be aware of GDPR, and that's quite compliant with GDPR. May not be compliant with the temporary spec, which was not compliant with GDPR. But so I'm not sure with consistency. ICANN's original target said we want to keep WHOIS as much the same as possible, subject to full compliance. And that's implicitly not going to be consistent. Susan and then Chris.
So let's.
So I'm not sure I agree with that, Al. I think a couple of things. So first of all, I have to say that as far as the ICANN is concerned, the temp spec does comply. Otherwise, we wouldn't have passed it. I'm not saying that there aren't other ways of complying, but we think it does. But much more importantly, I think Susan's point is valid in the sense that fragmentation of WHOIS, in the sense of an inability to, you know, look something up for one record and be able to find it, and look something up for another record and not being able to find it, or to take your example, not having a consistent approach between a registry and their own registrar, are matters that I think this review team could, if it chose to, comment on in a sort of meta way, by not, you know, necessarily being very specific, but to say the principles of X and Y matter and currently do not appear to be happening. You don't have to lay blame or any of that, just need to make a statement. Say they are not happening and that is of concern. Because in truth, if you took GDPR out of the equation, we were sitting here looking at what we're looking at right now without GDPR, we would actually be saying that, I suspect. So I don't see why the fact that GDPR exists should stop us from saying it. It makes no sense to me that we would allow, or we would accept, by dint of not commenting on it, a fragmented and inconsistent system. Thanks.
I think one of the largest areas where I said is not compliant with GDPR, I misspoke. It is over-compliant. And requiring or allowing registrars and registries to make decisions on their own in many areas implies inconsistency. And we may be able to fix that in the EPDP or may not. May not is more likely than may. Volker.
Yes, Volker Drayman speaking. I'm just wondering if us making a statement here, it doesn't conflict with what we had said initially when we set out that we wouldn't comment on GDPR and we wouldn't take into account the work of the EPDP. This seems to be backtracking on that original intent, and I'm not sure if that's our mission. I mean, we have the EPDP that is supposed to deal with that. We are supposed to deal with the WHO's Review Team 1 implementations and the implications and make recommendations on how to improve on those, but I think GDPR and the EPDP work are outside of our scope.
Chris?
So I agree with Volker, but I don't think what we're talking about actually steps across that line, because I'm talking about making a statement at a principled level. In other words, it's got nothing to do with GDPR. Just as a general principle, the following things should apply. It should be consistent. It should be whatever the right words are. I'm not going to wordsmith it now, but I don't think just because what is happening in GDPR is a useful pointer to the problem doesn't mean that by saying as a principle things should happen, we are interfering with the work of GDPR. Unless, of course, we don't believe as a principle that those things should happen, in which case we won't make that recommendation.
My only concern is words like consistency, you might end up with a lowest common denominator, which may not be what we're really targeting. So I think we need to consider that.
But that does go to Volker's point. Sorry, Alan, but that precisely does. If you're going to say, and by making this recommendation, we might end up with this, that is now thinking into any scope. And I don't think that is our job. But I do think it's our job to say, to make statements at a high level about what we think the service, if I can call it that, should be there for. I mean, we have already at the beginning, I think. So I think it is I acknowledge that we need to be careful that we don't overstep the line by commenting on GDPR, but I do think some high-level statements would be useful.
Look, we have been sitting on a fence, and a fence with sharp, pointy tops on it, in that, you know, we said we're not looking at GDPR, but we haven't been able to making some reference to GDPR. And in terms of the EPDP, our report is going to be published before the EPDP finishes. The board will have to act on it likely after the initial part of the EPDP finishes, so it'll be sort of locked in stone at that point anyway. So we can't really impact it, but on the other hand, if we believe that there is something going on that we need to I think we can comment on it. We're not going to try to second guess what the EPDP is doing, and nor do I'm not sure we have any authority, given that the board will not have approved our report until after EPDP, certainly the first phase, finishes. We're not in a position to make a recommendation that is unsanctioned by the board. So we can say what we want. It doesn't really have any impact, and I prefer to not say things that we know have no impact. I guess if there's something that we feel we need to say, then we should say it regardless. Chris?
So, I mean, from a compliance point of view, if you look at and see what's going on out there, GDPR, no GDPR, there is a temp spec that has changed the policy. So if we just look at the current policy for RDS, and the fact that there does not seem to be any compliance actions occurring based on either data it is a blank who is, except for registrar information. I can show you that. I can show you companies, registrars, that have redacted all of their data so you don't even know which country they're in. They're a business, and these are not necessarily registrars that in the EU. So, when you look at a record, either literally it's blank or it says redacted and you get absolutely no registrant information, those are compliance issues. And, the open question for me from a practical point of view is, do you even bother to report these? Because I don't think compliance has the resources to do much about it at this point. So, but we're seeing you know, again, like as Chris said, the fragmentation of this is you should at least, per the temp spec, be able to know what country this registrant is in, at the very least, because if you're taking legal action, that's going to be your first decision, is where are they located?
If you report it, what does compliance say?
But I could do that by in droves today.
Susan's reporting in office, it is, thank you.
Huh?
Susan's reporting in office, it is, thank you. Look, I come to the same sort of conclusion as Susan, but I think for a different set of reasons, because I'm conscious that you know, what is actually happening in GDPR is not necessarily something that we should be commenting on, but it is relevant. So let me give you a couple of for instances. It's not impossible that in March of next year or before then, it will become clear that further sort of temporary way forward, I'm not suggesting a temp spec because that is unlikely, but some further temporary way forward is necessary in order to fill a gap between the policy making and the end of the EPDP, or rather, sorry, the end of the time frame for the temp spec. Now, in that sort of instance, Alan, comments and recommendations from this review team are relevant, and they are something that the board would take into account. If this review team said, in its overview of who is, irrespective of whether it is no consistent know who is or consistent inside leg measurement, consistency is important. That is a very important recommendation. And in deciding a way forward, even if it's only temporary, the board is going to take something like that into account. So I think it is relevant if this review team feels that it can make that sort of a comment. If it doesn't, it doesn't. I get that. But if it does, then I think I don't think it's right to say that it has no power or no relevance, because I think it does. There are a number of circumstances when I think the board would look at the sort of pot of stuff in front of it to make a decision, and included in what are going to be recommendations made by this review team.
Just as a counterpoint, I think the compliance now has more time than ever on their hands, and we've seen simply because of the reasons that the number of who is compliant has radically decreased, or who is in accuracy or complaints that can be actioned has been radically decreased, but we are seeing on the side of contracted parties more and more enforcement of the temporary specification. So we get more inquiries to that effect. How have you implemented it? Why are you divergent there? What's your reasoning here? And so they are focusing on that more now. It just took them a while to get the handle on what's happening and watch what's happening and now how to, thinking about how to address that. So that's something that's already happening there, just as a
aside. Doing that, this is Susan. Through the registrar audit? Have they started that up yet?
No, it's simple, normal compliance tickets again. It's I'm not aware of the registrar audit having been started. Maybe we're just not a part of it.
We'll be talking later about the whole issue of recognizing patterns and reacting to them. And I think that's particularly relevant when you look at a registrar who, for instance, is redacting all countries. So I certainly would encourage you to submit a few of those tickets. Catherine?
Yes, thank you. This is Catherine Robles for the record. I just wanted to say that if we were to have a recommendation that goes that talks about the consistency, wouldn't necessarily have to mean that there's a one-size-fits-all, right? You could still have a differentiation according to which markets the participants are active in. You could have differentiation between legal and natural persons. So this whole idea of leveling down, I think, is less relevant if you look at the possibility to differentiate within that. And if we can agree that there's consistency within the different categories, then that, I do think, would be a very useful thing to state, because there's no point in making differentiated rules if then there's no application of those rules.
That does come splot into the discussions the EPDP is having. So I think we'd have to word those carefully. Any further discussion? We're going to come back to this theme as appropriate going forward. All right. The first item on our substantive agenda is who is recommendation number one strategic priority. That is the recommendation of who is one number one. And I will turn it over. How are we going to work this? Do you want to sort of lead us through the, a quick read of what our recommendation was, and then Rita goes through the comments? I think it's probably best if we do that than trying to go back to the originator in each case, since you're probably more familiar than they are right now with where we are on that recommendation.
If you don't mind hearing my French accent the whole meeting, that's fine.
Most people find your French accent charming.
So I did not follow the date when public comments arrived, but what I did is to organize them, reporting first those which are supporting the recommendation, and then those where it's more neutral, and finally those where there is disagreement. So for recommendation 1.1, on this you have support from the registrar stakeholder group and the GTLD registry business constituency. There are, I think, other supports on the next slide. So from the RRSG, their comment is the following. If ICANN wants to indeed be viewed as a global organization, then it is very important that they monitor and consider legislation and policy developments worldwide and not be overly influenced by interest with the U.S.-centric viewpoint. Do you want to comment on that?
I would say certainly for the supports, Jean-Baptiste, just go through them, and if someone wants to raise it, they'll call out, as Volker does.
Oh, okay, perfect.
Yes, just one comment. I think even the supporting ones are helpful, and if only in making part of our argument. So we should maybe look back at our reasoning and see if we can slot some of these comments that we have received into that reasoning just to support our arguments further. I think that it's helpful to take into account the community feedback, and it's when it supports our argument that we're making, then why not?
Thank you, Volker. So next one is just support from the RISG, and just wanted to note now that the RISG in their public comments mentioned that they were supporting the comments from the registrar stakeholder group. On business constituency, so they urged the review team to ask ICANN to reaffirm its commitment to RDS WIS as a strategic priority and follow through in a meaningful way. One suggestion is for the team to provide a timeline for setting temporary and final policies and their implementation as part of a comprehensive approach to satisfying existing and emerging needs for access to domain registration data. The needs of law enforcement alone are compelling. All right, moving on to next one if I find the mouse. There we go. So there is another supporting ALAC. ALAC agrees with the report's recommendation on strategic priority, so that's for recommendation 1.1 and 1.2, especially as it seems as if findings from the Who is One review team to support its recommendation are still true. And so there is one disagreement from the NCSG, and that's the only one. These recommendations early address the huge failure to address data protection that has taken place over the past 5 years, putting the organization at risk. With respect to its objective, the NCSG has consistently pointed out the requirement to comply with data law. It would suffice to listen to us and assign existing staff the task of researching the matters we have raised or consulting key stakeholders.
How is that in disagreement? It's saying we told you so, and it's saying staff should be assigned in ways that perhaps we didn't detail, but I don't see how that's agreement.
Well, you put Gaiman saying his name for the record. I think you could argue that this is disagreement because they feel it's not going far enough. They would like us to go further in what we are recommending. So that would be agreement, basically saying that we have recognized that there is something there, but disagreement with the approach that we're taking to address this. But unless we are now considering opening up a whole other set of recommendations, I don't know how to best address that, other than to maybe point to the next round of the review.
Catherine, for the record, yes, I agree with Volker. I also thought about this one, and really, I think the only thing I can take from it is that they would have liked us to do more of a scolding in the recommendation, but that is not the purpose of the recommendation. The recommendation set out a path for the way forward that is operational, specific, time-bound, and whatever else you do for SMART recommendations. And so I would say that we take note of this and their offer to volunteer support for the team that does the actual monitoring of legislative developments, but we don't change the recommendation per se. And I agree, you could probably think of it as disagreement or not really disagreement on the substance, but regardless, I think on this one we should take note of it, possibly integrate it into the comments, into the reasoning as you were suggesting, Volker, which I think makes a lot of sense, and just say that parts of the community were extremely unhappy, and then we move on from there. But my conclusion on this one would be to leave the recommendation as it stands.
Recommendation 2, which we haven't gotten to yet, says to support this mechanism, the board should instruct ICANN organization to assign responsibility for monitoring legislation policy around the world and provide updates to the board.
They have the same comment.
It strikes me that two things. Number one, we didn't say ICANN should reaffirm that this is a strategic priority, and I don't think it would hurt to say that, because we're focusing purely on monitoring activity as opposed to treating it as a strategic priority in all ways. And that would lead it to consultation with the community, not in the recommendation, but in the implementation note, is to interact, consult with the community on how this should best. Catherine.
For the record, this actually is something we discussed a couple of months ago, if you remember, on one of the calls, namely, to what extent do we want to reaffirm commitments or recommendations that were made during the WHOIS 1 review team? And we had agreed, as far as I remember, that there would be a general reference in the report that said we reiterate and endorse the WHOIS 1 recommendations, which I believe is there. And we haven't formulated it as a specific recommendation. So what we could do, Alan, is either lift that to the status of a recommendation or to just highlight this and say that in the implementation we would appreciate if further updates were also given on how previous recommendations from the WHOIS 1 review team had been followed up on, in particular where the implementation check that we did showed deficiencies, as it did for the strategic priority. So, but I would hesitate to just highlight from the WHOIS 1 review team, because that could give the impression that we think other recommendations from the first review team are not as important. So So operationally, for me, that would mean that we make it very clear that we still stand by the recommendations of the first review team, and that where there are deficiencies, we could encourage ICANN to tell us in the implementation of this one how they will follow up on the deficiencies identified in the implementation to RDS1.
I don't disagree that we can emphasize that, but in this particular one, since this one is absolutely key, and they had made it a strategic priority, but clearly did not, based on how the world has unfolded, simply starting this one off is to reaffirm and, in particular, go on with this recommendation. I don't think hurts it, and I think rubs. I think essentially says, you know, something that some of us could have said in many ways, that it's not sufficient for the ICANN board to say something; they actually have to follow through and do it. And I think this is a good example, but I think their point is well founded, and we could well say that here without hurting our overall plan. Yes, Volker.
Yes, Volker speaking. I'm lazy because I didn't have pull up the report yet, but what did we say with regard to implementation? It was partially implemented, fully implemented. What was our implementation stage in our report? Partially. Okay. That still fits with that comment, I think. Then we don't need to change that.
Dmitry?
Dmitry, for the record. Shouldn't we suggest not only place a mechanism to monitor, but also place a procedure for stakeholders to notify board about changes in privacy regulation? Thank you.
I'm not sure we need a specific one, but in the implementation, making a reference to interacting holders, I think, is part of that. Just a matter of procedure, who is capturing these ideas and intends to make changes? I don't know if Jackie is, Nagar is, Jean-Baptiste. You're okay. So I
this is Catherine as the rapporteur for this subgroup. I'm happy to implement the changes.
Thank you. So I think what we'll do is we'll do a emphasize to reaffirm strategic priority. We'll make sure that in the implementation note, the reference to consulting with stakeholders is there. Dmitry?
Well, I think that consulting is not the right word, because consulting means that board is the consulting means that board initiates the communication. We need some channel for the stakeholder to initiate to start the communication
and dialogue.
Yeah, maybe.
Catherine.
Yes, this is Catherine. I mean, at any point in time, anyone can raise anything they want. So I'm not sure we need to set up a general channel, because it might create this expectation that somebody would notify changes, and nobody might want to take on that responsibility aside from NCSG. And they also, they don't cover all the jurisdictions. No, I don't mean this to be funny, because they do say they have raised these issues. Nobody's listened to them. But institute a channel by which if somebody notifies the law, ICANN is automatically bound to do something about it. And operationally, I don't think it would have any serious impact. You know, we would be creating something that's just another empty mechanism, because there's no way you can rely on whatever is said. You still need to verify it. So I stand by the proposal that we made, which is that ICANN needs to set up a mechanism on its own that will do this kind of forecast and planning, and that we cannot rely on the community to do it, I can, even partially. But so if we say something about stakeholder inputs, I'm happy to include that, but to create a dedicated channel, I think, is a bit over the top.
That's why I said just a more general dialogue opportunity, not a specific channel. I mean, we're back at the normal standard question of ICANN of why do we have multiple stakeholders? We have multiple stakeholders because we don't agree with each other. And although the NCSG was
relentlessly saying you have to adhere to privacy laws, there were other parts of ICANN saying, and don't put a focus on that. So it's, you know, just because one group says something doesn't mean that ICANN has to immediately march to those orders. So there is judgment calls involved here and balancing of things. We had Dimitri and then Susan. Did you want to back in?
I want to say that regional stakeholders, not only from Russia, often raised queries about how they should be compliant both to ICANN policies and national privacy regulation. I know it's about Russia. I know it's about the Ukraine. So the that's why I think that the procedure is necessary. But yes, the formal the wording about dialogue is sound reasonable, but well, it should, the request should have practical consequences. Thank you.
Yeah, but I think we have to be careful. In our recommendations, we're not talking about a detailed implementation. Susan?
Real quick, and I don't want to open this up and suggest a new recommendation, but I think what's really missing in this, too, I think the recommendation is fine in the way it is, but even if the board had treated the strategic priority, the community didn't, right? Because we couldn't agree on anything. And so this doesn't fix everything with creating policy, new policy, because we have quite a you know, I don't even know how to categorize it, but with the community making policy that then has to be implemented, you know, it just, you see all of the disagreements between the stakeholder groups and no incentive to agree. There's much more of an incentive to disagree with each other than to agree, which so it's almost a fatal flaw for the ICANN community in general. So the board could have, you know, and I don't agree that ICANN treated this as a strategic priority, because I think there could have been, ICANN org could have led us, the community, down a clearer path to deal with the data issues. But even if they, let's say in the best of all worlds they did, I don't think the community would have followed that path. And you know, so maybe there is another recommendation down the way that we should rethink what the how policy is created for who is at, you know, within ICANN.
Look, the board did take action, initiated a PDP on a new RDS system, which was supposed to factor in privacy issues. We know how well that worked. So I agree with Susan, the community was not, did not see the urgency in coming to closure on it, and that is a real problem. It's not necessarily our problem, but it's a real problem. Catherine?
Catherine, for the record, I think we're swiftly moving to the meta level here, but it's a really important point, which is, and we do reflect that, I think, in the reasoning around that recommendation, because on the one side, ICANN did recognize how difficult it would be to make progress on the who is, which is why they first had the expert working group and then the policy development process in the hopes that the PDP could build on the EWG report, which, as we know, didn't quite happen. But you certainly can't blame the board for that. On the other hand, the operational plan shows that there wasn't much priority given to the whole thing at staffing level. We need to think about modifying the rules so that if something is a strategic priority that is of essential importance to the continuation of the functioning of the system, that maybe we need to operate a little bit differently with stricter timelines or with some consequences if the policy development process cannot deliver, that could take away this incentive to simply not move, which still exists in parts of the community. And I think we've already seen that de facto this does happen because ICANN saw itself forced to adopt the temporary specifications. So the question would be whether there needs to be some thinking done about how you could address situations where the failure of the multi-stakeholder model to deliver has an essential impact on the organization.
I know Chris wants to speak. I'll simply point out that the GNSO woke up last January and decided that the PDP process does not necessarily work very well when there are either difficult questions or questions with highly diverse, strong opinions on it. So that's well understood. I'm not sure the board has the mechanism to fix that, but I think, or at least we're talking about it for the first time instead of pretending the problems don't exist, which is what's happened in 10 years. Chris?
So that's a good job. I'm not about to say. And what problems? two things, I think. Well, three, actually. So, yes, personally, I agree. The question, right, yes, that's right. The question is how do you deal with it? And I actually think it's being dealt with. So, two things. So, first of all, the GNSO itself has got this looking at its thing. I can't remember what it's called now. Thing going on. But secondly, the board has started a conversation about how we can improve the multi-stake. It's couched in terms of how we can improve the multi-stakeholder model, but I think everybody knows what we're really talking about is how do we fix the GNSO's PDP process, which involves everybody because it involves the GACS input and it involves ALAC's input and so on. And I think if I remember correctly, we've got a session on that. We're having a session on that in Kobe, and the goal is to try to get to a point by the end of next year where there is some coalescing in the community on ways that we could make this process at least more obviously having a problem in each individual thing. So timelines, for example, would indicate, because you can't meet them in PDPX, that there is a problem. Then how do you fix that? So all I'm saying is I think these things are being dealt with, and whether or not it's appropriate for this review team to make any comments on them, I will not comment. But I just want to say for the record that it is being dealt with. The board is involved, because the board also actually ends up having to make decisions that the board actually doesn't want to make, or rather have to make, simply because the stuff that comes to the board isn't fully formed because the process doesn't work properly. So it's as much in our interest as anybody else's to get it fixed. Thanks.
All of that being said, nobody is talking about whether the GNSO Council is structured properly to do the job. But
I think that would be part of those discussions, Alan.
They're not.
No, the discussions that we are initiators, trust me, it will be part of those discussions.
And the other part is a lot of the solutions to the problem in the GNSO's perspective seems to imply less involvement of the rest of the community, not more. So there's
that may well be so, but that's not an uncommon response from organizations. It's a quite common response. CC's response would be exactly the same.
Going back to this particular comment, the board made the life easy for itself because it chose to ignore anyone else. The GNSO could do the same thing.
Correct.
Lily.
Lily, for the record, the discussion here brings me to attention to the text of the recommendations we are going to make. So the general rules are how to put up recommendations. So my understanding is the recommendation is for ICANN board. So my question is how prescriptive should be the language in the recommendations? Are we going to guide ICANN board to implement the recommendations? I'm very cautious to go to the detail of the implementation methods. So So I understand we are going to have some engagement sessions with the ICANN board. So I would rather put the recommendations in a very general language, not relating to any implementation methods. We can elaborate a bit more when we have the engagement sessions with the ICANN board. That's my personal suggestion.
Lily, thank you for dragging us back to the subject. If we're going to spend this much time talking about an easy recommendation, we're never going to finish. I think we have general agreement that we will strengthen the recommendation, reaffirm the strategic priority, put a note in the implementation that there should be interactions and the, you know, it should not be purely the board acting unilaterally. And can we leave it at that? Catherine.
Yes, I think this is Catherine. I think when we reiterate the strategic importance, it wouldn't hurt to welcome the process that the board has launched, and to say that, you know, this our review has clearly shown that here it is of significance also to reflect on how you run the PDPs, in particular when it comes to contentious issues. That doesn't necessarily that remains at the at the abstract level, doesn't get too prescriptive, so I think it meets your standard, Lily. And nonetheless, it does pick up this issue that we're identifying, that the process is not fit to deliver in situations such as this one.
Have you captured that? Between the, okay. Jean-Baptiste, back to you. If you remember where we were.
And we're now on recommendation 1.2, reviewing the support from RRSG, LYSG, and ALAC. So RRSG supports the recommendation, but also suggests that such updates also be provided to the GNSO Council to enable it to initiate timely policy development processes where necessary. For the RRSG, this is a strong support. Monitoring should be comprehensive, and all reports to the ICANN board should be balanced, free of BS, and reflect the full spectrum of legislative and policy developments. The ALAC agrees with the report's recommendation on strategic priority, especially as it seems that the findings from the WIS review team to support its recommendation are still true. That's press recommendation. And this is the same comment from NCSG as well, since it was on both recommendations, just as ALAC.
What I take out of that is the only real suggestion that for change is to request that the board redistribute such reports as appropriate. Clearly not all of them will be something that we'll be in a position to make public comments about, but so in the implementation, do a request to make such reports public as appropriate.
I think we did in the third.
Unless we've already said it, in which case we shouldn't say it again. Any further comments? Jean-Baptiste?
That leads us to the last recommendation under strategy, which is R1.3. So there, RRSG reports that more transparency is helpful. RRSG supports that. ALAC agrees with this recommendation that any board group that is tasked with examining the RDS issue should be transparent about its operations, findings, consultations, and any recommendations or conclusions. This is particularly true when, as in this case, significant sums of money have been expended flying them, and I can meet with data protection authorities, example given the large delegation sent to the International Conference of Data Protection and Privacy Commissioners held in Hong Kong in 2017. No, I didn't.
We're done.
Okay, why wouldn't... Okay, just 1 second. It's the same on this one? Okay.
Yeah.
Those are all the ones you listed in the spreadsheet.
No. I'm just checking now. I don't know why there's a...
I'm not sure why there's a... You're going to get a message, but the spreadsheet ends at number under the third comment.
All right. So that's surprising, though. I don't know why you're doing that. Let me just check the...
Before we discuss the specifics, Chris, do you have anything you want to tell us?
Should I have? On this particular recommendation, Alan, I think I've already said that the current situation, not that it affects this recommendation, but the current situation on the board is that we're not running a who is caucusy working group thingy because we don't see there's much point while the EPDP is going on. So there is a caucus group of board members who are closely involved in the EPDP, and of course Leon and I are the liaisons. So there is a sort of a working group, but none of that has anything to do with the recommendation, which I think is perfectly fine. But I just wanted to make the point, I think, that the working group to which this recommendation was originally referring actually no longer exists. But that doesn't change the fact that it's a worthwhile recommendation.
Maybe I'm a bit confused, but is a recommendation that a specific working group document its charter really worth the paper it's working on if that working group doesn't exist anymore?
Well, there is also the fact that, again, it's a question of how the board operates, and in general terms, let me be specific, that I'm not being specific. In general terms, committees have charters. Working group, the occasional working group has a charter, but not that many working groups have charters. And it's not really desperately relevant, in my view, whether a working group has a charter or not. What's relevant is that the community knows what the working group is doing, especially in respect to something like this, which I would call an outward-facing working group rather than an inward-facing working group, which, for example, would be something covering board efficiency.
To be clear, is it public knowledge that this working group has been dissolved?
I believe so.
Then I would say...
It's public except for Catherine. The governments, once again, have been kept in the dark. I know, I think when I say it's public, I don't have a big announcement, but it is in our minutes that the working group has been
there. Then I think a recommendation on this particular working group is inappropriate. We may want to reform it to say any board working group, in quotes, and any group that is focusing on RDS issues should be made public and blah de blah.
Yes, that would be useful, and I suppose what you could do, if you think about it for a second, when we strung these recommendations together, this board working group on RDS was taken as a step that the board took as part of the recommendation to treat who is as a strategic priority. So maybe what we could do is agree a recommendation that says any working groups or committees set up by the board in respect to who is and recommendation one, blah, 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 should do the following.
Any disagreement? So reword the recommendation not to make specific reference to a group that you know doesn't exist, but apply the general principle. Noted. If our staff support team need help in rewording, we can find someone to help you with the words. If not, go for it. Jean-Baptiste, I believe that's strategic priority. And next on our agenda was supposed to be a single who is policy.
Right now it's supposed to be your break, your first break of the morning.
It's
yeah.
Break.
Yeah.
Okay. We now have a break. Do we have any remote participants? No. Okay. 15-minute break. All right. If we can reconvene. And for the record, Stephanie has not checked in, so we're trying to find out where in the world she is. And I guess the next one we'll do is research.
Can I have your attention, please? So we move to privacy proxy services, Alan?
No, I think outreach was next on our original list, was it not?
Just after a single WHOIS policy, yeah.
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 So we'll skip over Carlton's and
yeah.
Keep going unless there's some other reason to delay. I don't think Carlton is a...
Yeah.
Well, we'll miss him, but I think we'll survive, so let's get it out of the way.
Thank you. So here on slides, you have two comments on the section itself. One is from the RSG, where they agree with the determination of partial implementation for the WHOIS own regulation. And the second one is from, and I don't want, I forgot what was its domain name. Sorry, I don't have it on the...
Rights Coalition, I think.
Yeah, domain name, Rights Coalition. Thank you, Alan. So we're on outreach and the RDS WHOIS 2 mutation in 3.4.4, that there is a little strong evidence that any outreach targeted at non-ICANN audiences was contemplated or carried out. The domain name Rights Coalition disagrees since all of the groups ESSAC, GAC, CCNSO, ASO have been actively and in many cases almost continuously engaged with ICANN on RDS WHOIS issues since the date of the WHOIS 1 review final report.
Maybe I'm missing something, but how does that address outreach to groups that are not part of ICANN? Does anyone see a connection that I'm missing?
Who is the domain name?
It's Kathy Kleiman and Michael Kariakis. I don't remember his name, something like that. There may be other people, but they're the ones who signed the document.
Sorry. There was no acronym on there. Just me putting that so that you have more space to...
I didn't understand any accounting. I didn't understand any of her comments at our open session in Barcelona. So.
I had significant trouble with that also. Okay, I think our answer to our comment was focused specifically targeted at groups not part of the ICANN ecosystem. And their reference is specifically to groups that are part of the ICANN ecosystem. Booker.
Can we perhaps make that a little even clearer, like neon signs that blink that this is directed at a certain target audience? So we are basically saying, yes, there has been a lot of internal communications within ICANN engaged groups, but clear that there's a certain disconnect with these areas.
The author of the recommendation, i.e. me, will work with our editors to try to clarify that.
I would go for the walking hand. Haven't used that in a while.
Say that again.
For the record, this is Catherine recommending that the highlighting be done using the walking ants animation in Word for Windows.
Noted. We will enlist the use of walking ants. Are we done with this one? Okay. Just so we know, who is making notes on what our formal responses will be, which will not include the reference to walking ants?
How do we
ask one? No, we have a column on the spreadsheet which doesn't show on the slides, which is the response of the working group.
No, so on that we can, yeah, we can just update this document and then share it again, just to make sure we have captured correctly.
Okay, so the answer is we are specifically talking about groups not part of the ICANN ecosystem, as opposed to those mentioned. Thank you. Next.
This is Catherine again. I think the point that Volker made, that for many of the feedback items we've received, we can very easily integrate them into the narrative at some point. I think maybe that should also be included in the column as a default, you know, that we've included it in the rationale, because a lot of this does point either at a lack of clarity or other issues that we can address easily, so that it doesn't feel as confrontational. Because if we just say, you know, you didn't understand, it just unnecessarily creates friction.
That leads us to recommendation 3.1 on outreach, where the recommendation says that the ICANN board should direct ICANN organization to update all of the information related to RDS WHOIS and by application other information related to the registration of second level GTLD domains. We have supports from RRSG and RISG. Then the business consultancy recommends that the team ask ICANN.org to now take more informed and distributed measures to expedite community efforts to create a single RDS WHOIS policy document and provide a timeline for development, implementation, and outreach. In particular, we ask the team to recommend ICANN.org to reach out to law enforcement and cybersecurity communities, engage them in meaningful dialogue, and incorporate their feedback. ALAC supports in principle, but only when ICANN policies on registration data are finalized. And finally, NCSG has repeatedly lamented the state of the ICANN website and the difficulty a novice or even an expert with experience at ICANN has in finding and interpreting the available data. We have recommended that ICANN hire a librarian and task them with assisting those who wish to find information on the website, as well as organizing the material properly and preserving hyperlinks as a legacy, ensuring that it remains available for the future. It might be advisable to recommend these improvements as an immediate assistance measure. There is two answers.
Yeah. I was going to make this comment about the previous NCSG comment. That's not actually disagreement. That's just rhetoric and useful, possibly useful input, but it's not disagreement. So I'm not sure that it's particularly helpful to define it as such. I would define it as neutral because it isn't disagreement, and neither, if I remember correctly, was the last one. It's an opportunity to talk about stuff which has got nothing to do with the recommendation. So I would recommend defining those as neutral and saying thank you for your comment.
Interestingly, in the spreadsheet, that is what Jean-Baptiste did. So somehow there was a discrepancy between what the spreadsheet says and the color of the type. Under disagreement, you have not applicable. Walker?
Yes, I'm Volker speaking. I'm somewhat sympathetic to the intent of the spirit of this comment. I think sometimes someone who regularly tries to use the ICANN website to find certain documents, it's hard, even for someone steeped in the ICANN culture and knowing what he's looking for, hard to find a specific document or certain points of information on that website. And the website, I would agree also with the comment, is the principal means of outreach that ICANN has available at its hand. So anything that can be done to make this monster negotiable, as in finding your way across it, I think would be appreciated and would be a tremendous step of outreach that I could do at probably very low cost.
May I propose a response? Certainly the review team is sympathetic to the comment and tends to agree, but the overall ICANN website is a larger, is out of our scope to comment on. Noting that ICANN did hire a librarian at one point who promptly quit, and it took a year to hire the person and who then left almost immediately. That's not in the final response. And the ICANN board has since initiated the ITI to address accessibility of information on the website, not cheap, as Volker just implied. Okay. But all of that being said, that is out of scope, but we tend to agree. Are there any further comments? In terms of the ALAC comment, I believe saying it should only be done once things are reasonably settled is part of our implementation, but we need to verify that it is. The ALAC said support in principle, but only when ICANN policies on registered data are finalized. I'm not sure we used the term finalized. I think we may have said that we used the word term the dust is settled, but I believe we do have that. Next.
Thank you. On recommendation 3.2, so this recommendation was, with community input, the ICANN board should instruct ICANN organization to identify which groups outside of those that routinely engage with ICANN should be targeted effectively through RDS outreach. So here we have support from RRSG, RYSG, and ALAC. RRSG supports, however, the cost for such outreach should not increase the ICANN budget. RSG supports that. ALAC supports in principle, but only when ICANN policies on registration are finalized. And the NCHG finds that it is not clear why this outreach needs to be done and why it is a high priority, particularly given the lack of readiness of the data and the current limbo situations with respect to any replacement for WHOIS or RDAP implementation. At the very least, there are much higher priorities than identifying your target audience for information as yet unprepared. We would recommend dropping this recommendation.
Comments, or you want me to? The comment on the registrar saying the budget shouldn't be increased, I don't think we have control of the ICANN budget. We certainly could put an implementation note that we believe this should not be a major undertaking, but whatever. I understand the registrars are legally obliged to put that into every comment.
I don't think that's the thing. Speaking, I just think the intent was not to change anything about the recommendation, but to make sure that we at least reflect that in the language of the reasoning to make sure that ICANN is mindful of its budget when implementing this.
I'm not sure how I could phrase that politely. The other comments on the registrar one. Registry, we don't need any comments on. ALAC, again, the implementation implies don't do it till we're finished, or perhaps says that explicitly. And NCSG, I open the floor to comments.
part of their comment certainly is that we're not ready, and again, we do address that, I believe. In terms of much higher I'd be amenable to making it medium, but I mean one of the issues is when the whole GDPR related stuff is settled, registrant data will be handled very differently than it was today, and reaching out to registrants who are not part of the normal ICANN ecosystem, I believe, will be critical. Reaching out to other people may be less critical, so it may be a mixed priority.
Well, Volker speaking, two comments. One, to reaching out to registrants, I think that is the main job and responsibility of the registrars that have the contracts with the registrants. So I don't see ICANN taking the responsibility of making that contact and that information, but rather ensuring that the information that the registrar has to provide to their customers is includes that information. So make it basically included in the documentation that the registrar has to provide to its customer, but not make it an outreach has to do to the registrants. And the second part, I understand that I think where this comment is going is that they're saying it's premature because we don't know what RDS is going to be in a year down the road, and I certainly have some agreement in myself for that position. So if I can were to spend millions of dollars in outreach to all kinds of communities with regard to RDS, and then RDS has changed in half a year's time from what it is today, then that would be a waste of money. So
I believe this was another one saying don't do it now.
Yeah. That reflects the priority thing. If we say it's high priority, then that seems to be us saying do it now. So reducing the priority is probably the right step. Reduce the priority to maybe not medium or high, but say do it when RDS has settled,
okay,
because
so
that's the ideal time.
So
to
we need to look at the wording up versus timing to factor that in, and in fact, different aspects of the communication may well have different priorities and different timing. Catherine?
Yes, thank you, Alan. This is Catherine for the record. Two points on that. I think we had two purposes in mind here. One was to inform everyone once the dust has settled about what the new rules are. But the other purpose, which I think is already reflected in the recommendation, is that we also need to make groups aware who are not yet part of the ICANN process that there are changes forthcoming and that there's to pitch in with their views. And to give you just one concrete example, we realized very recently we found the hotline, or hotlines actually in every EU member state and a couple other European states, that you can report child sexual abuse images to that you come across on the web. And what we did not realize was that those hotlines to then forward information to law enforcement relied on the WHOIS to identify which websites the material was hosted on. So those hotlines' work will be immediately impacted by the unavailability of information. They're not public authorities. They're privately run enterprises, not-for-profits, rather. And we have many examples, no doubt, of such groups which are, as of yet, unaware of these changes happening, are perceiving that there is less information available and don't even know where to take their issues because they're unaware of the existence of this whole system that governs how information is accessed. So I believe it is actually of the essence that that outreach happens now on the changes that are happening. And then there should be a separate outreach effort once the new rules are in place to inform everyone about into one here, one relating to the work that's going on, and then the second part relating to the rules once they are in place. So I believe this is high priority, and this should happen now before it is too late.
As usual, I have a comment. Totally, completely agree with you, Catherine. And I think that, you know, part of this recommendation includes the inaccuracy reporting, which it's very clear when you look at almost any data that ICANN provides. When it comes to the Global South, they just are completely uninformed about what is going on with ICANN. And so there's very few inaccuracy reports in the Global South. So, I mean, that's a target area that I think ICANN recognizes. There's definitely been some inroads, and you hear a lot of discussion at times about the Global South. But I think that I agree with Catherine that there are issues that are not going to change that need to be understood by registrants and Internet users in general. And it would be very helpful that the stay at a, you know, I could go down to a medium priority maybe on this one, but it's somewhat high priority because this education has been lacking or not very effective, and we just need to keep at it, and maybe it needs to be tweaked, maybe it needs, you know, some pivoting, but it's a critical area that we need to address. I think it's important we leave it.
Thank you. We do have a separate recommendation on the Global South, or parts of it on the accuracy part. So
right,
I'm not sure I want to recommend it here now. But what Catherine is saying is a clear departure from this original recommendation, which said don't really do anything until the dust settles. And you're suggesting we need a communication program that applies now. And it really, I think, is a second recommendation, given that the board will not act on this till next June, July. Is that something we still feel is appropriate to do something prior to the dust settling? Or is it really something whose time will have passed by then?
And maybe it's a misunderstanding on my part. This is Catherine again. But I read the ongoing, where is it? There should be an ongoing commitment to ensure that as RDS policy and processes change, the wider community, and there we obviously speak beyond the ICANN normal attendees community, is made aware of this. And I thought that that applied already now. Of course, we are a bit late with everything, but nonetheless, it also looks like everything else is going to be a bit late and that it might not be too late to still provide useful input. If we're completely changing the nature of this recommendation, then maybe it's a misunderstanding on my part, and then indeed we could consider whether it would still be useful. I would submit that it is based on recent experience to reach out a bit more, and I also heard that there were stakeholders trying to contribute, who in fact were trying to join the NCSG, as I understood, and were refused access because they weren't pursuing the right objectives. But I'm not really, I cannot, it's just what I was told at Barcelona by a number of organizations who were then seeking to somehow join the Public Safety Working Group instead, which of course is not possible for non-governmental organizations.
Let's talk about that privately. It's an interesting issue. Nagar?
Thank you, Ellen. Just the timing in perspective, in terms of implementation of these recommendations, as you pointed out, Alan, board is going to make a decision on the recommendations June-July timeframe, and then it would still be a few months after that before we have an implementation plan that can be put into play for the actual implementation effort. So the timeline for when this recommendation actually could get implemented is, I want to say, at about a year out from now. So do keep that in mind when you're talking about, you know, having a communication plan now versus one that gets implemented when RDS changes are finalized, because it could be one and the same depending on the timing of when the report is finalized and action is taken.
You're more optimistic on the EPDP than some of us are. Okay, on reading it again,
We do say, we imply that the dust settling on this one, but it doesn't really say that here. So I think we need to look at the implementation plan and make it clear that even if the dust isn't settled, there may still be some activity that is necessary. So I'll go over that with Jackie. That is an action item for me. Jean-Baptiste.
So unless there are no other comments, we can move to compliance.
The question is, do we want to do compliance next or data accuracy? The reason is Catherine may have to leave at around 3 this afternoon. 3:30. And I think we want Catherine's input on this one. So, Susan, do you mind if we switch this? And Lily, are you okay if we go to data accuracy next? Let's go to data accuracy then, which is recommendation number which? Oh, Volker.
Before we go on to the next topic, Stephanie has just mailed the list that she's delayed. She's currently in Heathrow and will probably arrive at Brussels in about 2 hours. Delayed from participating in the group, but according to her own schedule. So she will probably arrive this afternoon at the earliest. More in the email list. Sorry to interrupt.
So to be clear, she planned on arriving a day late. Without telling us. Okay. Stephanie is obviously going to have significant input on data accuracy. I don't believe we can afford to wait, however. And it was scheduled for today. I'd like to data accuracy.
Sorry, just to be clear, Alan, she says she'll be here this afternoon. She's going to be here in 2 hours. In Brussels in about 2 hours, so she should be here later on this afternoon. I'm not, if you wanted to roll it, say, till 3 o'clock or something, there may be a chance. Sorry, I apologize. Of course, Catherine has to, well, then we must proceed. Let's proceed.
Could we also take something that she would probably not have so much to come on the schedule of tomorrow and move that ahead and put data. No, I'm looking at common interface or issues like that and move the data accuracy to that slot. Just
we put things like compliance and data accuracy today so we'd have time to revise. Now, is our dinner tonight, our joint dinner? So we're not likely to do a lot of work tonight to revise. So there's not a between today and tomorrow, but that only leaves one day.
Right, I'm sure we can find something.
Let's see if we can find something right now. Well, if we're not going to do that, let's do compliance.
Yeah, I think we just move forward.
Okay.
We really should just move forward, guys. Come on.
Okay. No, I know, but I was trying to make sure Catherine is here for the data accuracy one, which is why I moved forward.
I absolutely agree with Catherine
doing that. Oh, ignoring the fact that Stephanie was
yeah.
Yep.
Got it. Okay.
I still right, think data, that data. She probably planned to be here for that, so.
But she's not.
Because the schedule says it's there. It's at 3 o'clock, and she'll be there at 3 o'clock. So she might have planned for that. And moving it ahead is kind of deprives us of that
well, it's not that we
side of the input.
Deprive her of commenting, she can give us. We can take another half hour somewhere in the next couple of days.
I'm just reluctant to have to go over it all twice. It's a big session. Chris?
I just think that we started off saying we're going to deal with it now because we noted Catherine's input on it, and I just can't see it changed.
Okay.
I want to be difficult about it, and I don't, frankly don't care at the end of the day, but seriously, we need to get on with this.
Data accuracy it is.
So on data accuracy, we got one big comment on the section itself from RRSG, where they remind ICANN that data achieved by providing our customers the tools, rights to access, correct, and or update their information, and by establishing internal processes and procedures that ensure the data provided by our customers remain accurate and complete. Article 5.1d of the GDPR does not require we poll our customers to ensure the data they have provided themselves as part of the underlying transaction was in fact accurate. Any suggestion to the contrary is a misinterpretation of the GDPR. Furthermore, since the signing of the 2013 RAA Sections 1AD, as well as 1F of the WHO is a program specification have been implemented. Implementation of these five sections has resulted in near-perfect address accuracy and contactability rates. As of January 2018, postal address operability is 99% and postal address syntax accuracy is 88%, up from 80% 3 years earlier. ICANN's own key findings include that nearly all WHOIS records contain information that could be used to establish immediate contact. In 90% of records, at least one email or phone number met all operability requirements of the 2009 RAA.
Is anyone familiar with this, where this data comes from? He says, looking at the registrar at the table.
Lily, for the record, I believe this statistics is coming from the regular report.
So if I understand correctly, the ARS reports say 40% of records have an error in them, but they still have some contact, which appears to be correct. Is that the interpretation of that?
So the interpretation of the standard or requirement is different here. So 40% quoted in the draft report is based on the meet all the criteria for all fields, like for email address and for phone. At the same time, they meet the requirement to be reachable. If you look at specifically for the maybe the phone number or email address separately, it can has a higher like capability.
But are these numbers referenced to all or just the post 2013 or post 2009?
If I may, Volker speaking for the record. I think the comment is precisely directed at the improvements that have been made since the original recommendation of the first review team have been issued, where contactability was an issue and the main concern of the recommendations made by the first review team. The comment here seems to be saying that, yes, this has been achieved because contactability is now up to, I think, what they're saying, 99% for postal addresses. And even the syntax is up to 88%. So in most cases, contactability as a goal has been achieved, even though the perfect 100% accuracy of all data is not quite there yet. But that hasn't been part of the original recommendation.
But is this in reference to the registrations for which validity checking is being done, or all registrations?
I think this is for all registrations. At least the comment doesn't make any differentiation between that.
I think we need a little bit of homework to make sure, because my understanding, I don't think anyone has audited all of the registrations, neither registrars nor ICANN. So I don't see how we could make those statements in the general case. We can make it for ones who, with respect for which the validation or verification is being done. But as we know, those are only new or transferred domains.
Like I said, I didn't write the comments, so I'm not quite 100% sure what they're basing that on, but I think what I heard in the discussion was that what this was based on the ARS, which made general statement with regards to accuracy. While they differentiated between grandfathered domains and non-grandfathered domains, overall numbers are reflected here, but I would have to check on that.
And, of course, in a post-GDPR world, the fact that the postal address may be valid doesn't really matter if no one can get access to it, for instance. Catherine? Let Catherine go and then Volker.
This is Catherine for the record. Just a more general comment, because, of course, none of this matters. The first premise, which is that we don't actually need accuracy because it's not an obligation. I think there's two different interpretations of the GDPR there, particularly Article 5.1. And I just want to recollect what the European Union's input on this was, which was to say that there is a requirement as to data accuracy, and that is in respect to the purposes for which the data is processed. So if you collect data for the sole purpose of reflecting information for whatever purpose that registrant may have, then indeed it would be totally up to the registrant whether or not they take issue with the data being inaccurate. If you have any further purpose, such as transparency around domain name ownership or general purposes of stability and security and so on and so forth, where there is an interest of another purpose in the accuracy of the data, then it is a bit short to say you don't have to pull the registrant. You don't necessarily have to pull the registrant, but there is an obligation to ensure accuracy of the data because there are purposes that don't solely relate to the interests of the registrant in ensuring the accuracy of the data. So I cannot agree with the first part of the comment, which basically says that there is absolutely no obligation to ensure accuracy other than if the registrant complains. And I note that here the comment from the union very clearly said that every effort, every reasonable step must be taken to ensure that there is rectification and that there should be compliance also with the data quality principle. And there's explicit reference actually to the relevant section in the expert working group report from 2014, which had more detailed recommendations on this, including on the accuracy reporting system. So I have to say that with the first part, I disagree, and I would say that our recommendation here should stand as it has been formulated. And when it comes to accuracy, I would just note that the fact that there is contactability of an individual does not mean accuracy for the purposes of the GDPR, because it could be any given individual. Just the fact that there's syntax accuracy has nothing to do with the accuracy principle under the GDPR. Thank you.
Catherine, can you make sure Jackie has those appropriate references?
Yes, of course.
Thank you. All right. Who will try to formulate a response to this? Catherine, do you feel you've covered both of these?
Yeah.
Would you mind trying to write a brief response that we can insert in the public comment?
Sure, I'll be happy to work on that.
Thank you very much. Let's go on to the first specific one. Sorry, we still have a general one.
We still have a general one, which is from the business constituency. The TEM spec allows redaction without consideration of data subject, EU or not, or legal entity. The contracted parties claim that they cannot reliably make these distinctions because the data is inaccurate. The convenient solution, redact everything, is overprescriptive. The long-term solution that is most beneficial for all parties, and one that we recommend the team emphasize, lies in improving data accuracy to the level where contracted parties can be confident when making data subject or legal natural person distinctions.
I think our response to that is noted. Do we need to make any adjustments because of it? Volker?
Yes, Volker speaking. I think this delves into the PDP more than what our mission is. So I think noted is probably the only thing that we can say and point to the policy efforts on the way. That we say this is not part of our recommendations, but rather something that, or our mission, but rather something that the GNSO has to deal with. It's not an argument that we have to make either way. It's not our mission here.
Yes, I totally agree. This is Catherine for the record. I totally agree with Volker that indeed that beyond what we say here. But we could note in the rationale that, of course, one benefit of greater data accuracy would be that we could be more confident in distinguishing as appropriate according to the new rules as to whether you're dealing with a legal entity and where that entity sits.
And this is Susan, for the record. And I don't disagree either with Volker, except that the problem with the data accuracy way it is, the judgment is made by, you know, ICANN and reviewing these records is oftentimes the data is very accurate, but not accurate for that person or that entity. So the data is good data. It's that street. It's a, you know, that address exists. It's just not that the data does not. Yeah, you cannot contact. You could contact somebody at that data, could not contact the registrant, which seems like a huge disconnect in what we're trying to accomplish here. So, you know, we may want to go back and look at the discussion part of this report and emphasize that, even though I think I probably have added that many times. But.
Catherine?
Yes, this is Catherine, and just to reiterate, I mean, that's really not accuracy as it is defined under the GDPR. Accuracy doesn't mean that it's a street address. Accuracy means that it's data relevant to the data.
Of course. You know, there was a case where I found a completely valid street address. The registrant was just sloppy enough to put an illegal postal code instead of the one that actually corresponded to that one, which made the whole thing invalid. So, and it was all spurious anyway, but nevertheless, it could have looked valid if they had bothered to find out the right postal code is. So there's all sorts of variations of this, and we're not going to fix every sin here. All right, so our comment will be noted and referenced to the EPDP. It's in transit. They may well be right that that's the direction the EPDP is taking, but that we're really not in the business of crystal ball gazing about where it's going to end up. Next.
All right. That leads us to comments on the recommendation 5.1, which was the ICANN board should direct the ICANN organization to look for potentially anomalous RRS results. Example given, 40% IRS-generated tickets closed with no action because the RDS with record changed between the time the RARS report was generated and the time the registration was reviewed by ICANN Contractual Compliance to determine the underlying cause and take appropriate action to reduce anomalies. So there was one supporting comment from ALAC supporting recommendations for determination of causes of data inaccuracy and actions to be taken to address the inaccuracy. And then two other... where they wondered what purpose does this recommendation serve. The review team seems to draw conclusions from seen error instead of accepting the most reasonable explanation that due to the time lag between the data query in the IRS program and eventual compliance review, the cause is most likely simply the passage of time. The RSG is one of the opinion that recommendations should address actually existing issues that are evidenced by data instead of initiating phishing expeditions. They also note that they consider it highly doubtful that the IRS program can be resumed under the GDPR and other applicable privacy legislation as it requires accessing and processing non-public personal information for no valid purpose. And RSG supports the RSG comment. Yes, there are some others. And the last comment on this recommendation is from the NCSG. The review team has done great work in compiling the work that ICANN has done on registrant rights and responsibilities, and this report will be a good for those who attempt to fix this problem. However, this very detailed section should remain as a resource for this future work. We do not see merit in developing new accuracy recommendations when the entire data set for publication is about to change. NCSG recommends removing this recommendation unless, as your footnote indicates, something arises which merits further action.
All right. We'll let Catherine go first.
Thank you, Alan. This is Catherine. More comment, because I think two of the responses sort of mix two concepts. One is public and the other is personal data. And one doesn't necessarily have anything to do with the other. So the nature of data as personal data is not affected by whether it's public or not. And the accuracy of data principles apply to personal data that is processed for any purposes, as long as that purpose requires the accuracy, which for most of them it does, that's the purpose of processing it. You need to have some sort of a quality assurance. And I disagree with the parts of the comments that say simply because there may be a data set in the future that is limited in terms of what's publicly available, we have absolutely no obligation, nor does ICANN have the right to check accuracy of the data that's not publicly available. And, I mean, if that were to be an issue, I mean, I could see, depending on the purposes that the EPDP agrees on, if as long as there's any purpose that relates to somebody other than the registrant, you would still have to have sort of a mechanism in place, and if that then has to sit with the contracted parties instead, that's something to consider. But as of now, I don't think we can take this comment on board as it stands.
Volker?
I think we need to take this comment into context of the recommendation, which is very specific here. I mean, we're saying that... there is a potential anomaly with regards to the data that the AIR generated. Basically, we don't know a reason for that, so ICANN should look at investigate what that reason might be for this so-called anomaly. And the two points that the RSG is making here is there may be difficulties in figuring out if this so-called anomaly will persist in the future if the ARS is phased out or replaced by something else, because access to that data is now very different than it used to be. So the question is, ARS can even continue? And the second part is this 40% difference between tickets closed and between for record changes between the time the like the report says, is that really an anomaly that needs and warrants deeper investigation? Do we have any evidence that there is some form of malicious activity behind that number? It's just a number that is generated naturally because of the difference in time between the ARS working, doing their work, and compliance coming to it. So take that comment as part of that recommendation, and it becomes clear that the recommendation will have to be reworked or at least severely looked at.
I don't think there's any question that recommendation will have to be reworked. Susan and I spent a fair amount of time with compliance, and I think we have a better understanding. So let's try to separate the issues of the specific thing we were looking at in the recommendation from the other issues. Susan, do you want me to try, or do you want to try talking just about the anomalous part that we were commenting on in the recommendation, and then we'll review the other comments separately? I can give it a stab, or you can start as you wish. Okay. Looking at the raw numbers, there was the anomaly part was, if you presume there is no collusion and no leaking the names to get them corrected ahead of time before compliance looked at them, it was hard to understand why so many of them have changed. I mean, what that said is, of the ones that were selected by the random sample, of which 40% had some sort of problem in them, the vast majority of those miraculously got adjusted. And yet we know that, let's say I think it was something like 60%, I don't remember the exact number, 60% of the 40% got adjusted. That says 25% of records changed by the time they were looked at. We know the overall change rate of who is records is not 25%. Well, I don't know what the number is, but 25% is too high. So why are these records subject to 25% change when other ones are not? And that was the anomalous part. There are a number of issues that became obvious to us. Number one, Volker had mentioned a number of times the amount of time it took. I don't think anyone understood what that time was. At least I didn't. This is a sample that is drawn in January. The report is issued about 5 months later by the ARS people, and it could then take 6 months or 9 months for compliance to look at it, conceivably almost a year and a half after the sample was drawn. I certainly didn't imagine the number was like that. Now, part of that is artificial because compliance rate limited the number of these they do a day. So implicitly, they were going to be drawn out. The second thing I realize that what constituted okay from compliance's point of view is a change. Doesn't mean the data is any better. Just means it's different. Mm-hmm. Okay. There was an unanswered question out of the first RSR WHOIS review. The one recommendation which was not addressed is, does the WHOIS reminder letter do any good? And the answer always was shrug. We don't. Now, in foresight, one could have said the WHOIS reminder letter has to be tracked as to when you send it. Registrars do track it. Registrars do track when the WHOIS record changes. No one attempts to rationalize the two together. How often are there changes to a WHOIS record within a month after the WHOIS letter goes out? We don't know. But that could well be an issue that comes up here. That was one of the triggering issues. There's no reason to believe, we know there's a high turnover in domain names. Lots of domain names are not renewed. I don't know what the percentage numbers are. There's no reason to believe the random sample is selecting them better than others. But there's a lot of things in play. So it looks like it's all innocent. There's nothing malicious. We do need to better understand why. Compliance is now tracking the closure reasons more detailed than they do before. But there's no... many of the changes that were instituted in the last 6 months, which would have applied to the current set of ADIRS data, which is on hold. So there are already things in transit which might be affecting these numbers and help us understand them. We don't still really understand them now. There are still some anomalies, but it's not as quite as mysterious as it was before. So I'm not quite sure we need this recommendation as such, and certainly as it is today. Susan?
Thanks, Alan. I think you captured everything. I mean, I don't know why I lugged these over, but I didn't take the time to review them. But these are all reports with redacted information, actually, for each for some representative samples of I don't remember which report it was, but so they were just trying to show us different things that, and what was really, there was definitely patterns that we could see. You know, some of these just expired before, you know, ICANN got compliance, took a look at them. You know, they were selected in the report, and then they expired. Some were just changed to proxy. Providers, and you know, and I would assume that you know the next group will be. So who knows, you know, how effective this will be. I think it's a good point that, you know, we did talk about the reminder letter. It would be good if we could figure, you know, out how effective that is. You know, is that really worth the reason? The requirement to send those, I'm not sure that's something we want to add to a recommendation. What did come to mind, and is one of the questions I had written down, was, you know, can we find out what percentage of registered or of deleted domains per the registry? Because I think we're going to see a lot of that. That's more just would be handy to know. I don't know how critical it is to know. The biggest thing that came out of the meeting for me with compliance is that they were providing reports that seemed very clear to them but was really not clear to us. And we spent, almost 3 hours there, I think, Alan. And a lot of that was walking through and trying to figure out what the category headings meant and what the information really meant. And both, you know, Maggie and Owen were really helpful. And I think we both, all four of us, came out of there going, oh, this sort of clarifies a few things. I wasn't as worried about it all. And so they were going to change how they categorize, not how they categorize the data really, but just organize the data, which I think will be helpful going forward.
They already have added a very large number of different categories. At some level, that granularity is going to make it more difficult because there's only tiny few numbers in each one.
Yeah.
But it was already done, but it was done, I think, after the last ARS sample was completed.
And I haven't looked at that. I had one more point, and it went. Go ahead, and I'll turn.
Volker, let me ask you a question. If we were to make a recommendation saying registrars should produce statistics, and I'm not trying to be exactly the relationship between the last change to WHOIS and the date of the WHOIS reminder letters, do you keep a history of when the reminder letters go out or just the last one? Or I know you're just one case, but...
Okay, so this is absolutely non-reflective of the overall registrar community position that we have. We have a record of when we send out these reminder letters simply because we usually combine them with our renewal reminders, so we reduce the numbers for that. That also means, of course, that these reminders are sent out at a time when many registrants will be looking at their domain names anyway because they have to renew them, so we don't actually whether the renewal reminders are the trigger, the fact that they have to log into their account to maybe update their credit card that has expired is the trigger that makes them look at it again, or if it's the who's that reminder policy reminder. So there may be all kinds of triggers at around the same time that happen that would make it very difficult to see whether it is actually the reminder that triggers that update that happens.
I'm not sure how much interest I have in trying to do it, but one could probably formulate the question somewhat differently to factor in both the reminder and the renewal date, to try to understand whether these changes are likely coincident with one of those or not. I can think of something the next day. I'll propose it. If not, we'll let it drop. So I think at the very least we want to make a recommendation that the statistics reflect not only whether there is a change, but whether the problem is rectified. Because they are told why the IRS rejected something. So that at least I think we would like to do. Whether there's a lot of other merit in this recommendation at all, I'm not 100% sure right now. Catherine.
Yes, this is Catherine. I just have a follow-on question because that makes a lot of sense to me that you cannot really relate what changes are made to what sort of recommendation is sent. I had heard from some registrars that they have a differentiation between the set of data that they use for billing purposes, which is one set, and the set of WHOIS data. And if you're just renewing your domain, there wouldn't be any reason necessary to update the WHOIS data. So I'm wondering whether we could nonetheless draw some conclusions from that, but of course that wouldn't hold true if you use the billing data to populate the WHOIS. So I was just wondering whether for you it's two separate processes all rolled in one.
Let me speak, because I'm not speaking on behalf of a specific registrar. I think virtually no registrar uses the WHOIS data for their own internal accounting and business relationships. That has become really clear in the EPDP, and I think that is a universal statement. It turned out one of the temporary spec statements was for the billing purposes, and virtually everyone said no. So I don't think we can rely on that information. Plus, I don't think any registrar is either obliged to or probably should try to correlate the WHOIS with the billing data. I know I have registrations where the billing data is completely unrelated to what it says in the WHOIS record. So.
Right, this is Catherine again, and just to continue my point, if there is no correlation, then I think you could nonetheless draw certain conclusions from the fact that the WHOIS data, because if there's no occasion to do so to renew the domain name because it's not necessary, then if the registrant does it nonetheless, you could at least venture to draw a conclusion that that's happening because you are also reminding him at the same time about the need to keep the WHOIS data accurate. But that's just, to posit a possible conclusion.
Volker described how he does it. Other registrars separate the processes completely. He's trying to maximize interactions. Other registrars try to maximize interactions on the hope of getting more business.
Yeah, that's just the domains that we have registered with us directly. If we look into the reseller marketplace, it becomes a whole different ballgame. For example, if we register domain names for Google, then we won't send those reminders, but they will. They will tell us that they have sent them out with certain log files, and other resellers do it similar. it's a pure sense of how far you can go with without violating your compliance obligations.
All right. And does anyone here feel that this recommendation, as it stands or close to as it stands, should be retained?
Earlier. So one of the things that Maggie emphasized to us, Alan, was that compliance, even though they seem very well reasoned, she was expressing a concern that there may be longer time periods in reviewing WHOIS records, A, because they may not have access to data, but also they were having some staffing challenges. I don't know. I can remember her saying she had some pregnant, people that were out on maternity leave, so pregnancies, and that, if there's a resource issue, then that could make this more challenging and a longer time span between when these are generated and actually reviewed.
That's not the subject we're talking about here, but let me make a comment anyway. In another recommendation, we talk about compliance and talk about their resources have gone up significantly. If indeed the situation remains roughly what it is today, where for compliance to do anything, they have to ask the registrar, please, sir, may I have the contact information, I don't know what the number is, but we are significantly increasing the work of compliance to do their job today. I think the registrars who have repeatedly said we don't want ICANN's budget to go up really needs to consider how compliance is going to respond to this. I personally have said that I believe compliance needs access to WHOIS information, period. And there should be a path because of their IP port, IP number that their question is coming from, that they should not have to ask, please, sir, may I have the data? But if that doesn't get fixed, then compliance's workload is going to increase significantly in this new regime, and I think that's going to happen by ICANN in general. So although I'm sympathetic with Maggie saying they can't continue to do the 4,000 to 5,000 WHOIS records, tickets that come out of ARS in today's world, I don't think today's world is sustainable in any way. And I don't know whether we want to mention that somewhere. It's not in this report. It's not in this recommendation. But we may well want to factor that in. Lily, do you have any?
So far, if I captured correctly, we still don't have a reasonable explanation about the figures here. 40% changes here. We still don't have any reasonable explanation on this.
Your microphone. I think we do have a reasonable explanation. I think 40% of WHOIS records have problems in them. I simply think that's a statement of the fact that we still have rather poor accuracy, and based on the ARS numbers, it's getting worse, not better. The question of why the numbers are cleared once they're reported, I think we now have a more believable understanding, but unless you presume that the ARS program is maliciously selecting bad domains, and I don't think anyone is presuming that, then I think this is simply reflecting the fact that our WHOIS accuracy is not good. I would use another word.
Volker speaking, maybe you read a different ARS report than I did, but to me it looked from the report that numbers were improving over time. Accuracy or at least contactability was improving from report to report to report to report. So I don't see where you're getting the numbers from that turn for the worse over time.
There's a table in the report that says, I think the second one was 24%, the third one was 33%, and then the last two are 39% rates of tickets compared to the sample size. I believe those are the numbers. I may be wrong on the 20-something. I'm pretty sure 33, 39, 39 are the numbers there. Whether it's going up or down and it's in the 35% range doesn't say a lot about accuracy. In most worlds, that would be considered a pretty poor record. But not surprising given the history. So I can't defend the question of anomalies there, of why they were suddenly fixed, which is what we were questioning in that report. I still don't think we understand it, but when you break it down to each of the causes, they're a small enough number. And remember, when they reported them, when they said 24%, they meant 24% of the tickets. So it's 24% of 40%, which is only 10%. And because they didn't cascade the numbers but listed them all separately, the numbers looked bigger. And they couldn't understand us talking for a good 10 minutes because we were making reference to one thing and they were in their head doing the multiplications and we weren't. So I have a hard time defending this recommendation. I think there's something that needs to be done with ARS and I'm not quite sure how to word it.
Question being if there's going to be an ARS in the future.
Well, what I'd like to now do is go over the individual comments, and I think that comes up in spades.
Lily, for the record.
Lily, please go ahead.
I have one additional comment. I constantly hear about the definition or interpretation about the data accuracy. Comment during the previous ICANN meeting and the priority concern about the who is one review team is about the contactability. I still disagree with this judgment. And for accuracy, for my understanding, is the data should be formatted correct. And also it should be correspondent to the restaurant. And in this context, the ARS accuracy report system only did half of the job. So if the concern is, the major concern is contactability, why we should put as data contactability, not as data accuracy instead. So I insist that we stand the position as the definition or interpretation of the data accuracy as two parts. You need to be formattedly correct and also corresponding to the restaurant data. And also, Volker commented that the ARS project, whether it will be assumed in the future or not. And during time when we drafted the terms of reference of this review team, that we gave a very general statement that GDPR may have impact of this review team's work, but we are not in the time to give exactly the description of the impact. But as of now, we still don't have any like concrete statement can made on this. And I share your concerns, Alan. I'm also in figure out how to make a recommendation on data accuracy. So based on my findings, the data accuracy is not optimistic at all. But there is no other methods except the ARS to improve the data accuracy. So I believe there is still a need for a recommendation generated based on the ARS project.
I'd like to try to separate out subjects of how do you fix the accuracy problem? And there are, in my mind, there are other answers. They're not necessarily palatable to some people, but there are other answers. You know, you'll recall we have another recommendation later on the grandfathering of the what validation registrars have to do. And that certainly is a way of addressing it. It's not necessarily a palatable way to some people, but it's a way of addressing it. I think in some levels, the GDPR and ePDP requirements that the data be accurate for the purposes for which it's collected are one of our strongest assets. Now, that doesn't say the ePDP ends up doing it properly, but there's a chance it might. So I think we have to separate out. I'd like to go spend a little bit of time now going over the particular comments and seeing how we react to it, because I think that might help drive what direction we go in. So can we go to the comments that are negative? All right. That's the NCSG comment. I think the comment on that the data is not going to be published, publicly published, is irrelevant. The data will be available to selected groups, lawfully available under whatever the mechanism is, and therefore it is the accuracy for those people who have access to it for which we are concerned. If no one ever had access to it, we don't really care if it's accurate or not. But some people will have access, and therefore it's that data. The fact that it is not publicly viewable, and therefore, you know, you can't have dilettantes and I believe we have the citations that Catherine mentioned in the GDPR that justify why we need accuracy, even if it's not public data. So I think we'll address that comment that way. I still believe we need to address the recommendation, and I don't feel comfortable saying exactly how that should be right now. It is conceivable we could remove the recommendation altogether. I would at the very least like a recommendation that the treatment of ARS data of the ARS tickets by compliance be altered to validate the data, not just recognize if it's changed or not. But I don't feel saying anything past that. Anyone else have any thoughts? Catherine?
Yes, this is Catherine for the record. I mean, from listening to this interaction, it seems that what you were trying to achieve with this recommendation really went into two directions. One is the sort of meta level of, is compliance sufficiently resourced to tackle issues effectively, right? That's the whole issue about that you discovered when you went to discuss with compliance what anomalous rate came from. So that's if we park that for one moment and then tackle the other issue about accuracy, then in view of what everybody said, I'm wondering whether it would be helpful to go for a more general recommendation that's not so much tied to ARS as a process. And of course here I'm conflating compliance and the accuracy reported accuracy of data issue, but if really as such would be put into question, then of course for us it would not be helpful to make specific recommendations that only relate to that process. Rather than it might be helpful to say something more general about how data quality can be ensured and what standards might apply in that context. So that's just so one solution could possibly be to separate the two issues and make separate recommendations out of them, and then stay more general on the accuracy one, and also be more abstract on the compliance issue as of whether compliance is adequately resourced, the issues that are brought to them.
Okay. I think a few things come out of that. One is not in this recommendation, but we talk about compliance resourcing somewhere else. And I'm not sure we have a recommendation on it. It may have been one of the ones that we simply said, well done, and we walked away from it. But I think we want to put a bookmark in that if indeed it is conceivable that some of the EPDP be such that the work that compliance does is much more complex and time-consuming than it is today. If that is the case, I think a recommendation saying compliance must be properly resourced to do its job, even in the event that its job becomes much more complex or time-consuming because of the GDPR implementation. I would think that would be a very important recommendation to make. So if in the end compliance can simply go to a keyboard and get the contact information, fine, that's what they do today. If under the EPDP implementation they can continue doing that, not going to the public who is, but going somewhere else, fine. If they are going to have to write pretty please letters to the registrar and handle the response that comes back or the non-response that comes back and track that no response has come back, then I think the resourcing they have is going to have to change because of that. And I believe that's a, even though it's in the realm of the EPDP, I believe it's a recommendation that we need to make because we can't wait 5 years to make it. Does that sound like a reasonable bookmark to put in place? We need to discuss the...
But isn't the question of what access compliance will enjoy part of the access discussion that the EPDP will have? So basically, are we infringing on the scope of the EPDP by making this recommendation here?
We're simply saying we don't know how it's going to come out. Most of us have no influence over it. And if it comes out such that compliance has ready the information, fine. Our recommendation is inoperable, whatever the word is. On the other hand, if the result of the EPDP implementation is such that they do not have ready access and they will expend significant more resources, their resources must be increased to allow them to continue to do their work effectively. I see no objection. So if we can make note of that, please. I had another comment, but I can't remember what it is now. We are in this unique situation. In a normal GDPR-type solution or type implementation, the controller has the data. So, for instance, in most cases, controller or the person has the data. Here it's distributed. There's a discussion on the table right now in the EPDP on whether Okto could have access to data for research. There is one of the recitals in the GDPR, recital 50, says you can put data to alternate uses that you don't tell the data owner about, if they are lawful and reasonable, a reasonable extension. But that presumes you actually have the data. In our case, if Okto wanted to do that research, they would have to ask each registrar, pretty please give me the registry, pretty please give me the data. The registry can say, I don't think that's a valid purpose, go away. David Conrad's the chief technology officer. So we're in a rather awkward situation that is atypical, and the same is true here. I would think the kind of stuff that ARS does in an organization where the data was present, So I think we need to keep it. And I think we need to recommend that the ARS be maintained. And I think that now requires a special recommendation that we believe, like the first Who Is review, that there is still an accuracy issue. The current ARS data indicates that. Accuracy is important in its own right and under EPDP, under GDPR, rather. So we believe that an accuracy program is essential. And I would think we will need that recommendation to replace this one. Go ahead.
I think if you replace accuracy with contactability, then we might get there. Because that's what you actually want. You want an ability of a third party to be able to contact the registrant or different contacts if they may exist.
Is that not going to be a harder thing to get?
Accuracy is very broad. Contactability is more narrow in its scope and easier to achieve.
How do we audit it?
By contact.
Remember, the ARS had three phases. The third phase is make sure the data is usable. And we haven't gotten to that because we don't know how to do it. And we may never. And the last report from the ARS said we may never do it because of the difficulty. So I like setting my targets high, but setting them at an impossible level, I question whether we can actually do that.
Sufficient level of accuracy to enable contactability, that would be something probably. That doesn't mean that every I needs to be dotted, every T needs to be crossed, but as long as the data can be used by a postal service to find whoever lives at the house next to the big station in Costa Rica, that would be sufficient.
But that's already there. I mean, one of the reasons that some of these ARS reports are closed is because the address is completely bogus from a viewing point of view and according to the Postal Service's rules, but is deliverable. And those get closed. And that's fine. It's not practical for the ARS automated system to recognize that, but they are addressed and they don't end up in problems because of that. But I'm not sure how you legislate that. I mean, the example I give is my wife has relatives in Ireland that you give their name and the name of the village. That's it. It gets there. Rules, but it gets there. So I don't know how you legislate that. And we've already been told many times, certainly in the EPDP, that paper mailing addresses have no value because no one's ever going to use those. Now, they do get used for things like subpoenas, of course, but
in most cases, it has to be the email address. Okay. That's the form of communication that we have in that contact handle, and that usually has a very high level of accuracy. At least in our experience.
All right. I think we need to say that, and I'm going to put things in quotes, the ARS must continue, whether it continues in its current form or in something else. And so accuracy / contactability must be something that we can ensure, even more so because the data will not be necessarily public. Volker?
Maybe instead of ensure. Because that is basically the ARS doesn't ensure anything, but it allows the community to form an opinion on what the current status is and what that measures need to be.
Not trying to wordsmith.
Yeah.
Okay.
So a recommendation saying we must have some level of contactability / accuracy monitoring, give us a high level of confidence in the data, and the issue that we have to put on hold somewhere for the resourcing of compliance if necessary. Okay. Further? Done.
Yeah.
How are we doing on time? When is lunch scheduled?
12:30.
Oh, and it's 12:30. Lunch. This meeting is adjourned until what time do we return? 1:30. We'll reconvene in approximately 1 hour. Thank you all.